Well, hello. Welcome to the very first official Haven podcast episode. I'm Andy Mort, and I'm really excited to bring this new glimpse into the world of the virtual village for gentle rebels and quiet creative misfits. Whether you're a current member, a past member, or someone who just fancies peeking through the window to see what it's all about, I hope this will give you the inspiration, the encouragement, and the support that you need to bring your unique and gentle imagination and energy to the world in creative, playful ways. In this inaugural episode, I will tell you a little bit more about what the Haven is. I'll talk about some of the aspects of the vision that underpins it, why this podcast exists and what I hope to kind of achieve through it, and some of the exciting changes that are going to be rolling out over the coming weeks and months in the membership area and community. The main part of this show is going to be dedicated to a conversation about change itself. Between myself and Lindsay Celeste Graff, who is the first of what I anticipate to be a gradually growing number of creative community partners that are going to join me in the Haven to make the experience even more creative and collaborative and nourishing for members, and also for those of us kind of partnering and making it all happen, really. We're going to talk about how to know or discern when it's time for a change. Flowing with the potentially fire-strong energy of change, which can be disruptive and even destructive when we allow it to wreak havoc on life without kind of having measures in place to understand what that energy does for us and where it leads us towards, and how we can use it and roll with it in helpful and healthy ways instead. We also discuss the challenges of changing as two or more people, especially when we're used to acting alone in decision making and direction focusing. And the conversation is nicely kind of sprinkled with and seasoned with the theme of integration and settling, how to bring a rhythm and a pace to life that means change and growth occur in a way that feels good and doesn't languish in stagnation or alternatively accelerate towards disintegration. So after the conversation with Lindsay Celeste, I'm going to give a little bit more background about what the Haven is, how it's structured, and the first gentle wave of changes that you will see lapping at the shores in the coming weeks and months. And as a bit of background before we get into it, I want to just tell you about sort of what's going on. You know, the fact that I reached out to Lindsay a little while ago to see if she'd be interested in potentially partnering with me to bring her creativity, her art, her unique perspectives on life to the community. And she's going to be facilitating a couple of community groups within the Haven community itself. The Creation Station, where she's going to share her love for things like collage and visual poetry and textiles and design and that kind of stuff, providing a space where we can learn, we can practice, and we can play without judgment or pressure. And she's also going to bring her fascination with the intersection between spirit and the physical world to the sacred space, which is the thing that really inspires her own podcast, which is the Magic for Realist podcast, which is a beautiful organic exploration into metaphors that really bring that intersection between spirit and the physical world into focus. And so, yeah, that's going to be a community group, an area where we can explore self-awareness, awareness of things beyond our own like immediate awareness, mindfulness, and the delightful experiences that emerge in those magical gaps around the edges. She's also going to sprinkle some of that stuff around the membership itself. She'll be showing up in conversations like this one to help me kind of open up and explore and unpack the Haven themes at the start of each month. September is always the month of change, and that is what we're going to be talking about today. It's the start of the Haven annual cycle, which begins with autumn. And after our chat, I'm really excited to explore some of the things that we talked about with members and to use these ideas as creative prompts to inspire some creativity and play and conversational meanderings within the membership within the community over the coming weeks. If you're not yet a member and you'd like to join us, then go to the-haven.co, so the-haven.co, to learn more about what's on offer there and how you can jump in and give it a go. I'll be back again after this just to talk a little bit more about the Haven and to kind of close any open loops and to say a proper goodbye. So, this is the beginning of the third cycle through the nine Haven themes, the kind of liturgical seasonal structure. The first one in 2019, September 2019, had a overriding theme of this idea that it's never too late to start the next part of your story, or it's there's always time to write another chapter. 2020 was around the idea that sometimes in order to get a better grip of things, you've got to let go of stuff first. So in order to pick up what you want, you've got to work out what you need to let go of. And then this year, this third time, it's kind of, I don't really have a have an overriding theme, because I think things are happening naturally and organically, and there is change occurring within the Haven, which is why I'm really excited to be introducing you to Lindsay Celeste here. Hello, Lindsay.
Hello.
I'm so glad to be doing this with somebody else. This is the first time.
Yeah, thank you. I'm really honored to be joining you in this. It's more than a project, this endeavor, I want to say. Mm. And as you were speaking, I was thinking, well, maybe the overarching theme for this year is more like flow, or like organic emerging, like just sort of like, let's see where it goes. Maybe that's the theme.
I think very much that's how I feel. Like there was a part of me
like that wild felt, card.
Exactly. I felt like, oh, I've got to find this overarching theme. And it's like, no, I don't. Because in previous years it's arrived, and it's just mm-hmm. been something that has just naturally been there. And I'm like, right, that's it. This year it's not so much, but because of, as you say, the flow, the emergence, and the word, as we've been sort of batting things around before this conversation, the word integration came up mm-hmm. As an important word. And it was kind of, I used the word settling, sort of settling in, letting things settle, you know, what does that word mean? And then you came back with integration as a sort of preferred word, which is interesting. So, I mean, let's start with that, like integration.
Well, I even want to. Okay, and I also want to back up, and I'm interested in where this idea, because you've had the Haven for longer than 3 years. So, where did the idea of the seasonal themes come from?
Yeah, that it was. The Haven started in 2014, so summer 2014, which is a very long mm-hmm. time ago now. And it's iterated a lot over the years in different ways. And it started on my website as just a kind of membership private space there. And then it became its own thing over time. And I'd always taken a theme each month to explore, but there'd be so many different themes, but it felt like I was going over the same ground a bit mm-hmm. and coming up with new things to talk about or new things to explore felt a bit difficult. And then I think I was listening to something by a guy called Pete Rollins, who's sort of
he's brilliant.
Yeah, theologian and philosopher.
It's sometimes hard to follow, but he's great.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, sort of. Hegelian psychoanalyst, all this stuff. Yeah. And he was talking about this idea of like liturgical structures in things, and how to kind of like decentering practices is one of the things he talks about, and using art as a way to, I guess, confront people with truths within themselves and building community through these sorts of practices. And that really sort of caught my imagination in terms of thinking about liturgical structure within the Haven year, or just within the year generally. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, I grew up in church, and liturgy was like, you know, it's a big part of the annual cycle there. You know, you go through the different seasons of the church calendar, with sort of, yeah, Christmas and Easter being the big ones, but like everything repeats year on year. Yeah. And so that kind of got me thinking, yeah, what are the key areas of, I guess, personal growth, or, you know, personal development that are broad enough that we could rinse them or juice them every year, like year on year.
Well, it also reminds me of, well, some of my church background, but also the way that in pagan traditions link their celebrations to like the seasonal calendar so much.
And
so to me, it's fitting because we are experiencing even like natural cycles of seasons every year, and we find them similar, but then also, you know, we're at a different place, either in, you know, physically or inside, psychologically, than we were last year. So we experience the season differently. And so I really like that about the Haven. And I also like it's like there's a gentle rebel element to it, like a quiet protest, in that so much of like content creation stuff is like, hey, let's like brand new, like this is new, like more and new. And so you're like, yeah, it's the same old, we're doing it again. And like, but it's not boring, it's like richer, and there's a sort of spiral, like, yeah, circling back, that I think it's a great idea.
So. Yeah, totally. Yeah, the sort of image of the rings in the trunk of a tree come to mind, of like that. You know, you're going round, you're moving in a circle, but it's strengthening, and each ring in that trunk tells a story of a certain period of time. And and yeah, I think it is that gentle rebellion thing of actually growth is not just about new, about different, about more. It's about deepening. It's about going into those things and exploring really the kind of depths of it, which you cannot do if you just look at something once. And
yeah,
I think that's really important.
And so to go back to what you were saying about the integration or the settling, it's like that, to me, that repetition actually is part of allowing things to actually settle or integrate in. I guess I like the integration word because it feels like weaving, like if I put my hands, like the fingers together, or like joining pieces, and settling always feels like things are like coming from the top and moving down.
Right.
Like imagery, I think settling goes towards the bottom, and integration's more like side to side. But anyways, in whatever direction it's happening, it's about things like really actually becoming a part of who we are, how we move, instead of just being like a nice idea we kind of flew past. Mm-hmm. Like it's almost the difference between like driving through somewhere and like, you know, seeing the sign and be like, oh wow, we went there, or settling, like living in a place and really becoming a part of it, would be the integration settling idea.
Yeah, I like that. So yeah, that's
by really returning true. To the themes, it's like we're not just flying by them again.
Yeah, that's a good point about this settling, and I think to some degree that's how I feel right now. Is like this last, so like the idea of kind of bringing other people into the fold of the Haven and working alongside, you know, people like you and you know, potentially other people, to, I guess, broaden out and to fill out this space that has been created. Like, so it was the site redesigned in May.
And right. I remember when you kind of like disappeared for a few weeks because you were deep in that.
Completely unintentionally.
I think you said, you didn't say rabbit hole, you said rabbit warren.
It was like a rabbit warren. Yeah,
it's way more involved than a hole.
Yeah. And then suddenly, like, I found myself, it was as if I'd upgraded from like a small apartment to this massive manor house with all these rooms and all this potential. And I'm like, I can't keep I can't, you know, keep going around this whole place on my own and keeping it
it's like too much square footage to sweep
exactly
by myself.
Yeah. So it just felt like a really natural transition point to invite other people into, yeah, kind of bringing their creativity, bringing their perspectives and all of that stuff into it. And yeah, I'm really excited about what this looks like. But in terms of the settling, that's felt like everything's just flown up in the air, and like there's loads of stuff, and now it's a season of, okay, things are starting to land, and it's like, okay, what does this look like, and then the integration will happen there, I suppose. It's a bit like seeds, just all, you know, you've talked about that kind of image of the millions of seeds falling from a tree or whatever, and then some of them take root and then integrate into that ecosystem.
I like the way the two images are coming together. I'm very excited to get to see where this joint effort goes, and honored because a lot of what you've done and are really good at is kind of like the technical infrastructure, like the building of the thing that allows us to do this in a online space, and that is not my realm of expertise so far. I can like use things pretty okay, but the creating of them in that world is not at all something I know much about, nor really care to know much about. So to have somebody be like, hey, I have this playground, would you like to come play here, is like, that's a really great invitation. So
that was really cool.
So thank you for that.
Yeah, I can't say the technical stuff has ever been something I've got really excited about. It's almost been out of necessity, and then once I start playing, I can't I can't stop, and I like create things. I'm like, why have I created that? Like it's much bigger a house than I am. Yeah. So yeah, it'd be good to maybe sort of talk about what integration and maybe settling, but more integration, I think, looks like it, and sort of broadening out beyond the haven and sort of thinking about in general life.
Yeah, and this just to sort of give people some of the backstory, I think this is also in the context of the change theme that starts us off in the Haven year, and is fitting because we're changing up how the Haven works a bit. And when, to me, change and integration kind of go together, because something will change either from the outside or inside ourselves. And then the integration is about incorporating that change, so kind of like so that it sticks. So it's like an event unless it integrates, and then it becomes an actual change.
Nice.
And so one of the things I notice a lot in personal development-y world is that there seems to be quite an expectation that things go quickly, so you can like take a course and then it's supposed to change your life. And that, to me, that course and even the insights you might get in it is basically an event until it becomes a part, like until it actually changes something, like in the long run, or something's different, not just in that moment or that day, but in how you are afterwards. That's when I would consider it actually kind of integrated. And I don't think that's possible to have happen quickly. Like, I think if it's the feeling of it changing, like the insight or the moment, like the epiphany, that part can be really quick. Like it could be almost like an instant or a weekend or an encounter or something, but how that actually makes a difference in what you're going to do or say or be or work at, is that's not going to be an instant sort of a thing.
That's really, yeah, I've not thought about it like that. Like the event versus real change. And I think we often chase the events, and within the event, there's the possibility of change. And there's that exciting kind of the novelty of like, oh, something could shift here. But then without that longer term slow part, that change doesn't happen. So often we just maybe jump to another event.
Yeah. Like the image that's coming to mind now is of weather. So like if it pours rain, then it's raining. And you're like, whoa, it's raining. But you can't in that moment be like, oh, now it's, or it's snowing, now it's winter. Like, it's not winter the first time it snows. It's winter once it's been like snowing for a while, or switch in your metaphor, depending on where you live and how the seasons change. Or you could be like a storm chaser, you know, and you could just go to wherever it was raining or snowing, which does not mean you live in winter. Like, it just means that you're chasing the snow. As a way to just, a goofy way to talk about that difference between the event and it actually being a different season.
Yeah, no, that's good. I like that.
So like, if you just talk to me once and say, oh yeah, now we're kind of, you know, cooperating on some parts of the Haven, that's like really nice for us to say, but it's only really changed if, you know, it plays out over a longer time. And that's the part we are excited about, but we don't entirely know how that unfolds.
Yeah. And that's the uncertainty part, isn't it? And the bit that we've probably as a culture not been great at embracing because of the uncertainty, because of the exciting aspects of that, like, because who knows where it will lead. Yeah. But it's also the control part. We quite like to be in control of how things turn out, or you know, that side of things. So,
and the integration can be kind of messy, like, because some parts that you thought were really important don't end up being, and like other things, I see this in creative stuff or in life. Like, I can have so many ideas of what I want to change or do, and if I tell people about them, then I run the risk of looking foolish, I think, because not everything is actually going to end up becoming a part of it. You know, like, there's some sort of chaff or like, what's it called? Like the excess stuff that isn't useful after all, that I might've thought was really vital. So there's a messiness to that actual process of integration that doesn't necessarily look that flattering. And so we probably prefer to just, show the end result and then link it back to some grand moment of change. And we're like, and then it appears like it happened really quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, that's part of why it really appealed to me to kind of, I guess, like, thrash out this period of change in the Haven, in the way that, like, we'll sort of present everything, we'll talk like this as we're going through the change. And there's a big difference, I'm really aware of this, big difference between seeing something integrating in the moment, seeing something emerge in the moment, and that story or that narrative we will tell about the change down the line. So, like, retrospectively, you know, when you see how it panned out, how things, or at least became as they are at a certain point, you can almost retrofit a narrative or retrofit the events that took place and nicely take out the messiness and the chat.
Right, like, even now you're like, oh yeah, so in the spring I redid the Haven. Like, you summed that up in like what, one sentence now?
Yeah.
Actually, there was like sleepless nights and like it was a whole bigger thing than that, you know, but now it's like this nice tidy little story.
Yeah.
And so I agree that there's something interesting about, I guess, kind of publicizing some of that process, which I hope is actually helpful because, you know, other people are going through their own processes. And if we always just hide our process completely, then we don't get to learn from those. And there's some things that need to be private or need to be, you know, kind of internal, just so that it's, I don't know, not some sort of weird exhibitionist fest. But I think a little bit of letting the process be seen could be helpful, I hope.
Yeah, totally. It's knowing what's helpful and what is just, yeah, excessively maybe self-indulgent or like
people don't want to listen to everything.
No, exactly.
Which I think I want to segue from there into one of the things that excites me about us working together on this is, So it's the result. It's like what we might actually do and how, what would like result from it. But when you first pitched me the idea, one of the things you said was that in kind of like coaching spaces, there often seems to be this kind of competition between, like, I don't know, they're influencers isn't the right word, but I guess coaches or leaders trying to kind of like compete for an audience or a, you know, an online space or something. And there's this sort of like, it almost seems like political, like, you know, the friendly handshake, like, oh, come on my podcast. But like, actually it's a competition for the same audience. So one of the things you said was that whole mode of operating isn't appealing to you, but trying to facilitate cooperation and like collaboration and creative synergy between artists and creators and helpers is interesting.
Yeah.
And so that's also interesting to me, because the way that we do things as leaders or creators feels as important, sometimes even more important to me than what results from it. And so I think that's also part of what we want to invite people to kind of come along for, is watching creative people try and cooperate. because I hope that whatever we discover from this is also useful for other people cooperating, you know, and the hiccups we arrive at and resolve or whatever. So I just wanted to say that the process of trying to work on something together is also very interesting to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I like that. And that, yeah, it's worth emphasizing that kind of vision that I had, or that prompt for the change in the first place, was this feeling of seeing, I don't know, it's the competitiveness that is not necessarily enjoyed or felt by people. You can just see it really wearing people down and grinding people down, like the whole, I guess it's the hustle culture, hustle mind, where you kind of feel isolated and lonely. I think it's the loneliness of it that was really loud for me. And just seeing everybody sort of with good values, good things driving them at their heart, but being forced into this, like, I've got to compete for these. There's a limited pool of resources, or it feels like there's a limited pool of people. There's a limited pool of attention. And actually, and then the urgency and the scarcity mind kicks in. And it's like, how can we create something more abundant, more akin to that slow growth, that kind of real organic move towards developing both on our own and together, and to build a pool of people that is greater than the sum of its parts. It's its own thing, and that collaboration is not just people working together, it's creating something bigger than we can sort of imagine. So it's cool,
which reminds me of kind of broadening that out again, of like, I wonder I wonder for you, how do you sense that like it's time to change? Like, how do you know is it like the change just happens, or when it's a thing that you sort of make some moves towards? Is there like a recurring way you know that it's time to change? Like, is it a sleepless night, or is it like a stomach ache, or like, is it just a thought that doesn't leave you alone? Is there something that lets you know change is like imminent?
It's a good question. Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to get onto the discernment and knowing that intuitive, how do you know when it's time to change? I think it's generally just, it is a knowing, like something might feel impossible until suddenly it feels possible. Like something shifts and it's like, oh, like with, you know, I'd never really considered the possibility of bringing other people into the Haven as kind of partners and people kind of facilitating and leading stuff, until suddenly the old way didn't make any sense. Yeah. And so it's like, no, that is the obvious, that of course that's got to happen. And suddenly like everything changes so much that you can't quite imagine carrying on as it was. But I don't know what that is. It just happens. How is it for you?
Yeah, I think it's sort of like that. And I would also say the, I watch the thoughts that I'm having. And it's often like really, it's almost like they're quick and they seem to be almost like sneak in between things. So like might be the thought I have just before I go to sleep, or like it's the thought I have when I'm not thinking about the thing. So it's not the, because if I'm kind of logical about it, I'm usually on some sort of track, but then it's almost like a little like shooting star thought will just come from the side at an unexpected time. And it'll be like, and it might be a positive one. Like it might be like, yeah, yeah, go for it. Or it might be like, whoa, like that's not right. Or it might be just an inspiration of something to do. And those sort of sideline ones that I wasn't trying for, but they just sort of flew past. I think when those ones kind of stop or accumulate on a similar vein, I start to pay attention to them and they kind of accumulate. And I'm like, at a certain point, not listening to them seems anywhere from like foolish to really, really stupid. Mm. And I identify what you said of like, at a certain, there's like a tipping point where it's like, oh, doing the other thing doesn't make sense anymore. Yeah. And it reminded me of this community in Portugal that I spent some time with, and they were experimenting a lot with how to make decisions on consensus instead of like by any kind of top-down hierarchy or even organized democracy, but this sort of like hive organic emergent decision process,
right,
which I was really fascinated by. And when I asked them how did they decide things, their answer was that they just had a lot of conversations. Like everybody just talked with everybody about the thing. Mm. And, you know, in all sorts of different permutations of who you can have conversations with, both big ones and small ones. And those would just keep on going. And then they said, at a certain point, the decision emerges. Like it really becomes clear where we're going, not because anybody declared it one day, but just the conversations, by allowing them to happen, eventually go one direction or the other. Mm-hmm. And the other decision seems like it's just not getting talked about.
Mm. That's interesting.
Yeah. And I've watched that in much smaller versions of that, like with one person or a few people, where if you just kind of keep circling around the thing, eventually it's almost like centrifugal force, like some things fly off and get lost and then the core remains. And I find that organic process really cool. And I think it's sort of like what I'm saying and might happen just to myself, where the different parts of me are talking about the thing, and I might try talking it through with other people, or I might try writing about it or reading about it. And then over time, I lean towards one direction, and eventually the other one doesn't get any fuel.
Yeah. It's another kind of cyclical image, isn't it, of circling around ideas and yeah, as you say, the centrifugal part of the things, I guess that chaff again, like just flying off, like it's necessary because you're as you're sort of circling through the possibilities and the options and the, you know, how things could go, like those things need to fly off, like it's not a process that you can rush or say, okay, how can we be more efficient in this process? It's like, no, we've got to go through that. And that's part of getting there. Yeah. I guess my journal is probably as you're kind of talking about those thoughts that fly past. And that's what I notice in my journal is like, oh, that thing's come up again. And even with the changes with the Haven, which started by changing a kind of course and Return to Serenity Island course home page, was the product of me asking myself a question in my journal, which is, I wonder whether it would be possible to move this somewhere else at some point in the future. And then that just then escalated into a, I've just had a look, and yes, it will be. And then it all just happened. So, and that was another thing of like, yeah, I can't believe I wasn't, this was not on the cards sort of this time last week. Now yeah. I can't imagine it not having happened. But yeah, the biggest challenge for me, I think, is going to be, so talking about like, yeah, that community in Portugal, like actually having others involved and working through kind of the change, the how things will look in the future, and how we want to move forwards together in certain areas. Mm-hmm. Because I think, yeah, like have acted very unilaterally for a lot of my life in different yeah, areas. Totally. So it's an interesting, I'm sort of relishing the challenge actually. And
well, like, I think it's brave. I think it's brave to let somebody in to something you've made and care deeply about, and allow your process to itself to change and include other people. That is, there's kind of like, to me, there's like a brave vulnerability to it. Like that itself is creative and risky.
Yeah, it's going to be, I think it feels like a part of my own personal growth, like a really important part of actually you need to kind of learn this sort of team thing and the working with others, and that's actually going to help me personally massively, I think, because it does, it brings up certain, I don't know if blind spots is the right term, but certain things, that patterns that I recognize from the past where I might either use change to run away from the difficult part of commitment, or use like just withdraw and not change where change is necessary, which is another part that I wanted to kind of to look at, was the kind of, I guess, pace and rhythm, and recognizing when it's time to change versus when it's time to commit. Like, is change this kind of this beckoning, this temptation, because actually committing to something and doing the hard work is like conjuring fear or conjuring right, this totally. Stuff.
So it's like the allure of the new project.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that must be I think it requires kind of like honest self-reflection and an ability to be circumspect enough to be like, okay, is this, because this also involves like, sometimes you got to quit something, and quitting is the best thing to do. Like not always is sticking with something to the end completely the best idea for your own like health, creativity, or well-being of everybody. But when, you know, when you're just running away, and when you're, it's actually the end. That's a whole discernment piece that I think is partly self-honesty, and then hopefully I have some wise people around me that I hope I can talk that out with. And either when I talk it out with them, I hear myself in a way that allows me to see that I'm quitting or changing too fast, or they actually kind of reflect that back to me.
Right. Yeah. That's useful.
Yeah, I find that really helpful.
Yeah. I think, yeah, having that sort of sounding board or that thing to reflect back of, because it's easy to convince ourselves that some change is really necessary. And actually, when you think about it, it's either a procrastination or it's a running away from the thing that is really, really necessary, which is, yeah, maybe it's having a difficult conversation, or maybe it's just going through that messy middle part of a project
I got something here.
Go.
which is I think the energy to change, like that's really kind of like life forcey, creative, even evolutionary. Like that's a really powerful force. And so I think sometimes we run into trouble so that's really strong. It's almost like fire strong. And it can wreak havoc if we listen to it too much, you know, we can end up changing. I often feel like when I feel that impetus, I could end up like changing my whole life entirely. Like when it's strong, I feel like everything about what I'm doing, like my relationship, location, job, identity all needs to change. Yeah. And I've played it out sometimes where I shift all of those, and it's incredibly disruptive and to myself and other people, and kind of doesn't really, it just brings about a whole new set of like the freshness. But if I deny that energy completely, then I just stifle my own life force and the changeness of it. So for me, I guess tied with the integration lessons is this learning how to honor that energy that wants to change, but in smaller pieces so that I don't disrupt as much. So for example, like, okay, I'm feeling stagnant in my job. Like, maybe the thing to do isn't quit my job entirely. Maybe it's like, take a day off and go drive and see my cousin. And like, I've honored the change. I've gotten some creative flow. I've had a great conversation with her. And then a few days later, I come back and I'm not jobless, you know, like, which is kind of a great combination.
Yeah.
So it feels like I'm learning how to kind of bite off the right amount that I can digest it while still honoring the impulse to change. Mm-hmm. So for example, like, and it could be in a smaller artistic way, like, oh, you hate the painting you've made, and so you want to like change the whole thing. But maybe that impulse is actually really strong. And if you painted over the whole thing, you would lose a good work. And maybe what you need to do is actually just like go wash your paintbrushes and make another little painting on the side before that fire consumes the whole thing. And then the next day you wake up and you're like, oh, where'd my painting go?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or where'd my relationship go? Where'd whatever go? Yeah. I does that make any sense?
That does make complete sense. Yeah, I've experienced that, and you know, thinking there's moments with my music where that'll be the case. You can get so close to something as well that you think the whole thing's got to change.
Mm-hmm.
When you get that sort of that energy, as you say, that sense, the change energy is there, like something does need to change, but it's not everything. So like a couple of the things that I'd written down sort of related to this was around the pace for change. So the idea that when change is too slow, it can kind of cause a drift and a stagnation that means that things just sort of crumble a little bit. When mm-hmm. change is too fast, rather than integration, it can lead to disintegration because everything is unable,
it blows apart. Yeah,
it can't sort of do that sort of entangling and entwining.
It reminds me of there's lots of rivers around here that are getting drier with the drought. So when there's not enough flow, they start getting like algae.
Yeah.
And the water becomes like not that great to swim in or drink or live in as a fish. But then if it's too much flow, nothing can actually grow there either.
Yeah.
Like if it's just rushing past all the time, it's inhabitable and dangerous. Mm-hmm. So there's kind of this sweet spot where it's like very alive.
Yeah.
And that doesn't even have to be like uniform. There can be like gentler pools and faster sections, but overall there's a certain amount of flow.
That leads perfectly to my second thing, which is within that sort of energy of change is like anchor points and pivot points, and recognizing like asking that question of like, okay, what needs to stay the same right now? And so that might be in that river, it's like the rocks around which things might grow and mm-hmm. whatnot. And then the pivot points of like what needs to shift first or what needs to change next. And so rather than having that overwhelming, all-encompassing sense of like, everything's got to change, something's got to change, it's looking at, okay, well, what needs to stay the same? Like, what do I, you know, you talked about that, the kind of uprootedness of when everything changes, like you go for the relationship, the job, the location, like everything all at once. Yeah. And that can be completely discombobulating and like overwhelming.
Yeah.
And so just recognizing, okay, what are the things that can and ought to stay the same right now? Where do I need the anchors so that the actual pivots can have a stronger foundation and I can sort of move from there?
I like that. So, that's a good distinction.
I think coming back to just that So, like the idea of, so we've both done DISC personality profiles.
I was just going to bring those up.
Yeah, which I find, I don't know, I have a sort of love-hate relationship with psychometric, like personality profiling.
Yes.
Because I think we can get too sucked into the self-absorbed part of it. Like it tells me something about me that I can then tell everybody about me. But I find it, in the context of certainly thinking about working with you and working with a team of potential partners and whatever, like understanding what it is that you need in terms of communication, in terms of, okay, rates of change, and within the context of change, what's interesting is that different personality types deal with change differently, uh-huh. and also use change to cope with other things differently as well. So
I agree with you with the kind of the benefits and drawbacks of any kind of like classification of personality thing. I think they can bring insights to, like, they give a different language to talk about our uniqueness, and then they could also end up kind of being boxes or self-fulfilling prophecies, like, oh well, I'm supposed to be like this. Mm-hmm. But when it gives us language to talk about, like, oh, you are like this and I'm like this. And sometimes, as simple as it sounds, I just forget that not everybody sees the world the way I do. Mm. Like, entirely basic, but it bears repeating. So like I've just briefly looked at your DISC profile thing. And when I saw it at first, I'm like, oh, right. There's something about details on there that you're, mm-hmm. It doesn't say perfectionist, but so there's a different word. Anyways, something to do with the details and the accuracy really matter. And my first thought was like, oh my God, that's not me. Like, that is not me. Like, I so often don't care. Which is funny, because in certain parts of my art, like it really matters, you know, and I'll mm-hmm. cut something really particularly and like go back and go over it a lot. But often I'm way more kind of like broad strokes, like just not, it doesn't feel like that. I go immediately to the details. Mm-hmm. So when I saw that, it was just this clear reminder of like, oh, right, Andy's operating differently than me. Like, he's not having the same experience of life and then also of like working with me. Like, this is like, sometimes I'm gonna be this bizarre creature that is just doing something totally different to how he'd do it. And like, that in itself, regardless of the details, just being aware that there's a difference, I think, is helpful.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And what I love is that, you know, we can have conversations like this, and it's like the values, like vision, whatever, like the energy all aligns really nicely. And then, mm-hmm. then it's like, yeah, the kind of those operational things beneath the surface might be different. And yeah it's just recognizing, yeah, what's
creating enough
for the other person.
Like, enough kind of like grace, I guess, to allow for the other person's differing style, but then also being willing to like meet them enough. So that there is enough overlap that it's like functional, you know, because if two people are too much like, well, I just do it this way, and you're like, well, I just do it this way, then you just have too stubborn.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think that is the danger, as I was saying, the risk with those sorts of personality profiling things, as I've seen it occur, is I am fixed. It's almost, I know who I am now that I've seen it on a piece of paper, mm-hmm. and you need to like let me be completely me, rather than just recognizing, okay, we're different. Let's work out, you know, I'm now aware that you operate differently, and I'm aware of how that is. And although I can't get myself into that, like, let's work that out. Let's work
together. I was thinking back to the peace part where, it's like there's pacing in cooperation. Mm. I mean that in two different ways. One is that like, in order to cooperate, we have to find a pace that works for both of us, you know? So like, if one person has an idea, I've been, I don't know if accused is a harsh word, but I've been told that I can be, there's sort of like, just go like really fast towards something. Like I can just see the task, see what needs to be done, do the next thing. And like, even in a physical task, leave everybody behind. Like they just can't figure out how to help in the garden because I'm like at step six already, and they're really doing number two and wanting to do number three. And I haven't bothered to explain, because I'm just going so fast. So what pace, what does the pace look like in order for cooperation to happen? Similarly, if somebody's too slow, like if you get really, really hung up on a detail and you just keep going over and over it, I'm going to get like bored and disinterested and we will no longer be cooperating. So there's a meeting of, and that was a very harsh dichotomy of like, in that case, I was fast and you were slow. I'm sure it switches. But how to find the pacing between or in a group that is compatible to the cooperation. That's a whole other learning, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's what I mean when I'm talking about my sort of unilateral tendencies, it would be kind of similar to, so I would plan everything in my head, work out exactly what I'm going to do, and I would be at stage seven before I've even told anybody that I'm starting stage one. And and then
is great when you're the only one doing the stages.
It's fine then, yeah, but it can be, I can only imagine it's really, really irritating. So it's like, yeah, it's another learning thing for me is remembering to communicate intentions and communicate, you know, what's this looking like. And another thing that I have noticed is if I have sort of ideas of things in my head, even if I'm not concrete on them, and then I'll get an email that's got other ideas, my first thought is always, oh no, I can't do that. And then, so I've learned I'd need to put then space between first reading of something or first listening.
Please don't reply right away.
Yeah, exactly. And then it's like, let that integrate, let the, the whole thing integrate into, okay, no, that isn't completely at odds. Cause I think my initial thought is like this black and white, like that's completely at odds with everything that's, you know, sort of my life is meant to be. Uh-huh. And then it's, you go back, it's a bit like reading, you know, if you read what you see as like really damning criticism, say in an email, and it feels really painful the first time you read it. And then you put some space between that and then going back and reading it again. And you realize, actually, it's not as harsh as my mind interpreted it to be the first time I read it. And it's thing. Yeah, it's weird.
I had that happen recently where this was to do with going to visit my family. And I was like really unsure whether they wanted me to come see them. And I was spinning into this huge, like, oh my goodness, like, I don't know if they actually want me to come. Like, really like confused, down on myself sort of situation. And finally I like show the text to my boyfriend. I'm like, can you just read this and like tell me, like, do they want me to come or not? And he's expecting like some convoluted mixed message. He reads it and he's like, sounds pretty straightforward. Like there's exclamation marks, there's like two sentences that invite you to do different things, like they want you to come. Yeah. I was like relieved and a little bit sheepish, where I was like, wow, I really spun that. Like I really spun that through some insecurity filter, and that's not what was going on. So
weird, that, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. That space or that, the other perspectives. Yeah. Really helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, our minds are fascinating, aren't they? The way we do that stuff. Yeah, and I think it's communication, just open dialogue is, and that's again that cycling, that spiraling around things, and is going to be really important. Yeah, so I think we've kind of set things up fairly nicely, I think, for this fresh season, starting with the change. And so I think the plan will probably be to have similar kinds of conversations at the start of each theme. So like in this first season, we've got change this month, and then belonging, and then serenity. So we'll explore those themes in maybe just the two of us, or maybe if there's others get involved as well, we'll see how it goes. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing how all of this pans out.
I find these like auditory riffs really fun with you.
Oh, I'm excited. I hope you're starting to get a feel for the vision and the values and everything that The Haven reflects in the approach to community and creativity and collaboration and partnership and all of this stuff. I talked a bit about the themes and the liturgical or the rhythmic repetition that occurs by going into the same core nine themes each year. And this really has been a lovely anchoring point since I started kind of doing it this way back in the summer of 2019. And I'm really, really looking forward to seeing how it evolves with these conversations as well. You know, my initial thought after this first chat is that, wow, I mean, it like opens up all kinds of interesting avenues that I wouldn't have considered through solo reflection. Like there's something really cool about that. The merging of two minds that create something beyond what is possible when the two minds are on their own, if that makes sense. I was going to use the word synergy, and I just have used the word synergy, but I don't like the word synergy, so I apologize if you don't like it. Just on this theme of change, the ideas around kind of settling and integration, how the pace and rhythm of change is like that flow of a river, and the nature of that change energy that Lindsay talked about as well. These were things that I was like, oh yes, this is like already feeling like something really, really positive in terms of opening up the themes in ways that I can't like necessarily imagine beforehand. As I was editing the conversation, I was also struck by something in relation to that idea of the change energy, you know, how we might experience the energy to change, which if we're not kind of discerning, if we're not wise, I suppose, with it, it might sweep us up with an impulse or with a temptation to just change everything. You know, you feel that sense of like, I've got I need to change something. You get kind of swept up in that enthusiasm to change absolutely everything. We talked about the kind of anchor and the pivot points, and also considering alternatives to, you know, long-term or to that kind of more sweeping change, like breaking the routine with a day somewhere else or something like that. Something that, as Lindsay said, you know, means that when you come back in 2 days' time, you've still got a job. And I was thinking about the change of orientation or position in relation to things as well. You know, sometimes it's not the situation that needs to change necessarily, but it's simply the way we're looking at it, or simply where we are in conjunction to it, or it's something about the way that we relate to it generally. And it reminded me of something that Pete Rollins, who I mentioned in our conversation, he talks about in one of his, I think it's a seminar or one of his podcast episodes, about when a relationship breakup occurs, or a relationship breakdown occurs, even if the couple decide they're going to, okay, we're going to not break up completely, we're going to try again. It's kind of doomed to repeat the failure unless they break up with the relationship itself. In other words, the structure of the relationship or the approach to the relationship that led to its demise. So the structure, the kind of underlying the structure within it needs to change. And likewise, you kind of see people repeating the same failures with multiple partners. So even if they break up with person, if they don't break up with the style of relationship, with the approach to the relationship, with the structure of relationship that kind of leads to that failure, then they're going to experience it. The same outcome is going to occur each time, even though the partner is different, because they haven't broken up with the underlying structure. They haven't broken up with the style that they bring to it. And so when it's part of a pattern, it's about seeing the pattern as a symptom of something deeper. And it doesn't matter if change happens at the surface level without addressing it at the deeper structural level, the same outcomes are all but inevitable. In relationships, in
businesses in jobs. You know, you see this quite a lot, don't you, with people who seem to go through repeated cycles with workplace, like multiple workplaces or the same workplace, and they'll go through like disciplinary procedures and then things will settle and then it will happen again. And the question of like, how can you be so unlucky that this keeps happening? Or, you know, you keep meeting these kinds of people, like this really like unfortunate. It's not viewed, well, if it's not viewed at a symptomatic level, like, okay, what, there's something going on here that this is telling us about, this is a symptom of something. It can happen in all manner of contexts, but if we don't break up with the relationship, with the structure that is underpinning that thing or causing, you know, creating, if the change doesn't occur at the structural level, then we're doomed to keep repeating it. So I don't know. I hope that makes sense. I'm sure we'll kind of get into some of this stuff in more detail if it feels right over the coming weeks in The Haven. As I was saying, September is the month of change. In October, we're going to explore the theme of belonging, and November is the month of serenity. So yeah, the resources from previous years are also available to peruse in the Haven Library. So we can, you know, look back at the different angles that we've taken in years gone by, which is kind of quite cool and fun, even though it's a bit sort of, I don't know, it's a bit cringe-worthy at times as well. But it's just nice to live the growth and the journey, the explorations that have occurred as part of the story that we're writing together over time. If you'd like to join us in The Haven, I would love to invite you in. We've got a few events as well that you can join if you're interested. There's a regular weekly co-being space, which is kind of it's like if you've experienced a co-working thing online where people kind of join together and do their own thing whilst connected remotely. It's a bit like that, except there's no pressure to use it for work. It's kind of 90 minutes once a week that you can ring fence to dedicate to what matters most. It might be time to rest. You know, you can nap, you can read, you can create something, work on something, journal, meditate, fold laundry, listen to music, watch food, like whatever it is that you kind of need more of in your life. It's something that you can kind of get into the calendar. You can be alone together alongside a handful of fellow gentle rebels. And it's just a really nourishing time. I find it really, really productive, actually. Like there's something about having dedicated time to focus that often makes it the most effective hour and a half of my week, weirdly. So there's that. There's also a book club. We'll be deciding on a new book soon. As I'm recording this, we're just finishing up The Antidote by Oliver Berkman. We generally will take a slow dive into a book over a couple of months. The material kind of provides themes to explore, but the sessions use that as a catalyst. Like they meander and move in ways that mean you don't need to have read the book to benefit from being there. Like the themes are generally broad enough that they are relevant to us as human beings. As I say, the book is like a catalyst for discussion. The conversation reflects really what's going on for anybody that's in that session. Like if there are things that people want to talk about, it's just a natural jump off point for that. Again, really soul nourishing experiences. You can come along, no expectation to get involved, no expectation to contribute to anything. You can just come and be, you can observe, you can listen. You know, we get that. We get it, all of us. We're quiet souls, gentle rebels. And it's really important from our perspective, from my perspective, to ensure an expansive and caring environment. It's designed to help you feel safe and seen and, yeah, looked after, really. So I hope that gives you a general idea of what to expect. As we do more of these episodes, I'm sure it will all, you know, settle. It will all integrate further. And I think, yeah, the key is just to ask yourself, like, to get a feel for it. Like, ask yourself, does this feel good? Does this feel expansive? Does it feel right for me? Even if you can't quite put your finger on specifically why, if it does, if that is the case, I think you get it. And yeah, as David Lynch says, sometimes you've got to look at the donut, not at the hole. Don't know why that's relevant, but I've been saying it a lot lately. And I mean, it might be relevant in some way at some level, I don't know. Anyway, come and join us, the-haven.co, the-haven.co. And yeah, if I look forward to sharing change with you in the coming weeks and months, hearing about your own relationship and experiences of change. And yeah, if I don't see you or speak to you before, there may well be something else in the meantime that appears on the Haven podcast feed. But if not, I'll see you again in a month to chat about the theme of belonging. Until then, take care. Bye-bye.